Live from Chicago, this is Franklin Delano Roosevelt with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. And now, sitting in for the legendary Bruce Dumont, here is Chris Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's so great to have you back and working for scale here at Beyond the Beltway. Good evening, everyone. My name is Chris Roebling. A real privilege to sit in for the great Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway. Call us at 800-723-8289, 800-723-8289. Our email, btb@museum.tv. We want to hear from you. This is your Beyond the Beltway take on national politics. And joining us tonight, we've got Democratic activist Marge Halperin, Republican Jim Nalepa, and journalist Kristen McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune. Welcome one, welcome all. How are you doing?
Great.
Want to talk to you right away about how the Obama administration looks today after the morning talk shows, the appearance of Dan Pfeiffer on five. He did the full Ginsburg going on to five morning talk shows. Does the administration look like it was corrupt in these three scandals that we've been talking about all week, the IRS, the AP document subpoena, and of course, Benghazi? Or does the administration look incompetent?
I think you have to take each of those.
This is Kristen McQuarrie.
Yes. I don't think you can lump them together because I think the administration is looking. You even had Mitch McConnell this morning on some of the talk shows defending the Justice Department's activities as it related to the AP scandal and a leak that needed to be investigated. Benghazi is just continuing to be a real problem for the administration. I don't think there's any question now, especially after the testimony last week, that there was, I don't know if I want to use the word cover up, but the spin machine on that story really walked the line in terms of cover up. And then the IRS scandal is just, it looks more and more like ineptitude.
Marge, we'll let you bat cleanup. Let's hear from Jim Nalepa, the Republican.
All right, absolutely. You know, Kristen, I actually agree with you on a couple of those points. But Benghazi, no cover-up. When Dan Hicks testifies before Congress that he spoke to Hillary Clinton at 2 a.m. in the morning as the action was taking place, and she was clearly aware that there was a battle raging on the ground, that it was a terrorist attack, and yet we had time and time and time again the story about this video, Hillary Clinton carrying it on, Susan Rice carrying it on, the President of the United States carrying it on. You know, quite frankly, Chris, this morning, Dan Pfeiffer sounded like Susan Rice. Apologies.
All right. This is why you're batting cleanup, Democrat activist Marge Halperin. What are you going to say about the Obama administration?
Well, you know, it's easy to put out one fact and follow it with lots of things that sound like facts, but I don't know that they are exactly. What was known and when, you know, is not clear on Benghazi. But I think what is known is that there was no backup to be had. There was some wrangling over talking points, and Chris, I know you write talking points for a living, as do I in a lot of capacities for my clients. And the back and forth and fine-tuning wording is one thing. A cover-up and a scandal is something entirely different, and I'm not seeing that on the Benghazi issue at all. And as far as the IRS issue goes, there's an understanding that fundamentally something had to be done. Congress provided an imperfect bill regarding who was going to qualify for tax-exempt status and who wasn't. And the lack of clarity caused a deluge of applications. The Cincinnati office and others were trying to figure out what to do about it. And I think that it's a mistaken decision that was made. But when you set this up as, are they inept or corrupt, there's a whole lot of other things in between. The mistakes are made. Decisions, wrong decisions are made. That doesn't make people corrupt. It makes them wrong. It makes it outrageous what they did. But they did not have a clear strategy and the guidance they needed to resolve this backlog of applications the way they needed.
Hold on just one second. Let's take up Benghazi some more in the second hour. We're going to be joined by Annika Green, who until recently has been writing editorials for The Washington Times and is now an independent journalist and doing some public affairs consulting down in Washington. So we'll pick up Benghazi and Syria and some of the international threads in the second hour. So let's focus now on the domestic. And really, we've got the Associated Press and we've got the IRS. And I think we've got this other issue. This is what I used to call a derivative story. And that is, how well is the White House managing these issues? Okay, that because that turns into its own story and it will generate its own thread. And let's pick up on this point made by Marge. Jim, are you buying it that there was this growth in applications and folks at the lower level were just good-heartedly triaging the applications that were coming in from the post office every day?
Well, let's. I'm going to quote Senator Rand Paul today when he said there was a, quote, written policy floating around the agency that said the IRS officials were, quote, targeting people who are opposed to the president. When and if that comes forward, we need to know who wrote the policy and who approved that. Now, we haven't seen the policy. We have Rand Paul out there saying that it's there.
Did he produce a copy?
He did not produce a copy.
All right. Did he suggest his sources for this information? Because
no.
I don't think he's the tightest guy with the White House.
Not
the IRS.
But here's the point.
Right.
It's just not the IRS. Time and again, we see government agencies who have become bloated. Time and again, we see government agencies who have become too big for their own good. The government is too big. The government is out of control. And whether it's well-meaning incompetence or just the overwhelming burden of this bureaucracy that we have created, which we never had in mind in our Constitution. It is not serving the American people well and needs to be cut down. Government is too big.
Kristen McQuarrie, is government too big?
Of course. And I mean, if the IR scandal has shown anything, it's that. I think the most telling part of that entire story, and if you watch the testimony before Ways and Means last week, they have examples, and I don't think you can explain this away. Over the past couple of years, where the IRS was asking some of these groups, I want all of your tweets, I want the resumes of all of your board members, I want copies of every flyer you've ever handed out, I want a copy of every email your organization has released. And at the same time, the IRS is saying they're so overburdened. I mean, they don't even have the staff to have combed through all this material anyway, but I think that's the most...
Marge, as a civil libertarian, and you know that Kristen is reading from this. This is absolute gospel truth. I mean, this is what they were asking many groups for. What's your reaction?
If you wanted to find out whether an organization is engaging in political partisan activity, those things would be clues to that.
All right.
So you have to separate the partisanship of analysis from the activity and investigation.
It's Chris Roebling with you, the listener, on Beyond the Beltway. Our phone number, 800-723-8289. Join us after this break. Thank you, Tom Veracruz. It's Chris Roebling, and the program is Beyond the Beltway. I'm sitting in for your friend Bruce Dumont. He's out this week, and he'll be back next Sunday. Call us at 800-723-8289, 800-723-8289, or if you prefer, email btb@museum.tv. We're talking about the IRS. We're talking about the AP. In the next hour, we'll talk about international stuff, Benghazi, Syria, what's going on with Russia, things like that. The program Beyond the Beltway is your Beyond the Beltway look at national politics and government. Some of your friendly co-listeners have called in. Let's talk quickly to Mike out in Spokane, Washington. Beautiful Spokane on KXLY. Mike.
Thank you, Chris, for taking my call. Today America's greatest threat is not from any foreign power. It is here in the United States, the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service.
But did you, hold on one second, Mike, let me just ask you. Did you think this way before this revelation?
No, I haven't.
So now you're thinking things are different than they were before.
But yes, some at the IRS have become petty dictators. They determine what organizations, such as pro-life organizations and individuals, should be questioned, and intimidation a factor. Freedom of speech is in danger, of religion, of assembly. So we owe this to our military, who gave their lives for freedom, to clean up this mess at the IRS and Justice Department.
All right. All right, Mike, thank you very much for calling in. I think this is a question. You know, Marge, I'm going to come back to you to start off. You're a Democrat. The Democrats believe in government. They've got a lot of faith in government and some skepticism, whereas the Republicans kind of flip that. They've got a lot of skepticism and a little bit of faith. Should Americans be deeply concerned by the developments over at IRS that we know of already?
I think that you would poll and find very little support for the statement that the biggest threat against our freedom is the IRS. I don't think there's a lot of agreement about that. Government needs to be managed. It needs to be contained. And like any bureaucracy, it is hard to manage every decision at every office everywhere. There is a sensibility of leadership and where the government is headed, and sometimes a different office or different bureaucrat won't get the message.
But now,
you have to manage that.
All right, now, Jim Nalepa, Mike just brought up the military. You're a graduate of West Point.
Yes, I am. Thank you for bringing that up, and thank you to all those who serve our fine men and women in uniform. So back to the point. Marge, I agree with you. But if it was just that simple, that applications were piling up on desks on some bureaucrats, you know, in some office somewhere, it would be one thing. And I would say I would absolutely acquiesce to your point. But as Kristen brought up, active asking for membership lists, active asking if members were going to run for political office, there was no doubt that there was a coordinated intrusion into the civil rights of those groups. Had those questions not been asked, had that not been pushed forward, fine, bureaucratic ineptitude.
Well,
I think there was something far more insidious going on. Not necessarily that it goes to the White House, but it is absolutely a culture of corruption at the IRS.
Well, this is not like the old Red Squad days in Chicago when they went out infiltrating organizations. They asked for tax-exempt status, these organizations. The government did not go out to research and take away your right to run for office or anything else. These groups put themselves forward and said, we are nonpartisan, nonpolitical, and we want tax-exempt status, to which the IRS is saying, well, let's be sure that's right before we grant it to you. They started the conversation.
I don't think.
So, Kristen, does asking mean that you're now open to that kind of inquiry?
Not this type of inquiry. No, I think everyone expects that the IRS is going to vet you, that they're going to make sure that you meet that you are mostly a social service organization in the case of these C4s. But asking for copies of emails and flyers and whether or not people are going to run for office, I don't see how that can be misinterpreted at all.
All right, let's take another quick call. Let's go to Charlotte in Arlington Heights, Illinois, listening to us on the flagship station WLS AM. Charlotte,
hi.
Your quick point.
In the hearings, it came out that a group called Coalition for Life in Iowa was being asked to detail the content of their prayers before they could have tax exemption. There were also, I'm talking about religious discrimination here. There also a pro-Israel group had trouble, and another group had to promise that it wouldn't demonstrate against Planned Parenthood, the left's favorite organization. What is going on here?
Well, I do want to point out that NARAL, Pro-Choice America, is one of these 501c4s, and the League of Conservation Voters, Vote Vets, MoveOn.org. MoveOn.org, I don't know what social service they do. Do we know what they do? But they're in this category. See, they all came into this category before this new regime of asking everybody for their membership list and their email list and whether or not any of your members will be running for something.
This is really one step before going into the classroom in Nazi Germany and asking if you know any Jews.
I think we need to dial it down a moment. I mean, I want to tell you, first of all, I ran a 501c4 for almost 10 years, the League of Chicago Theaters. You could ask me what social service
they provide,
but I think they provided some great benefits. benefit to the city of Chicago and the nation and internationally with their talent. But the point is, we understood the requirements and the limitations on what our activities could be.
Okay.
And we expected to be monitored, and we understood whatever advocacy work we did on behalf of our cause was going to be monitored and regulated, and sometimes we would be fined if we did the wrong thing. In the nonprofit world, there's an understanding that these are the standards here. And in terms of these little stories I heard about a group that, you know, was making apple pie for moms and they got investigated, you know, you got to be a little careful here.
Right.
These individual stories, we're going to hear these rumors. It needs to be documented. We need to hear exactly what was
done. But some of the things that Kristen brought up were not rumors. They were questions asked. It's there in black and white. I fully understand your position, the type of organizations that both you and I have been involved in, the 501c4s.
I couldn't run for office under that in that capacity as CEO of that organization.
I think there is.
I couldn't lobby for bills or legislation.
And I think there is a case to be made that in some cases these C4s do act as pass-throughs for political activity. I'm not saying all of these organizations are innocent of doing that, but the point is you can't use these keywords that the IRS did as a federal agency and try to target out these groups without looking at groups like Rainbow Push or some of these other organizations that also do a lot of political work and have tax-exempt status. And I also think, what to your point earlier, Chris, the way that the administration handled this, I mean, they just flubbed it up from the beginning. And what was so interesting to me about that Ways and Means Committee testimony is the way they leaked the story,
yes,
where they planted,
yes, they
a
planted
question
at the ABA meeting.
At the ABA meeting. I mean, that is just, to me, there's no way, knowing how these press operations run, that someone in the press room at the White House was not aware that this was going on.
Let's go to Mike in Fresno, California. He's listening on great radio station KMJ out in the beautiful Central Valley of California. Mike, your quick point for the conversation.
I think Sergeant Schultz was reincarnated as Steve Miller Friday. I know nothing. I see nothing. I hear nothing. Dan Naughton makes Gene Kelly look like a quadriplegic. He's the best tap dancer I've ever seen.
You mean Dan Pfeiffer?
Dan Pfeiffer.
Pfeiffer, yeah. This morning. All right. Thank you very much for calling in, Mike. And thank you, Charlotte, for your earlier phone call. What I thought there was something that was, let's say, atonal about Steve Miller of the IRS coming before that committee and not having a few answers. I mean, did anybody get that? I mean, he was there to answer questions. Excuse me. And every time he got a substantive question, he said, you know, I don't really have that, or I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
No, right. But and here you are. You're firing the guy that's leaving in July or June, who is, again, a Bush strap hanger of all things.
He was not the Bush strap hanger.
Oh.
It was the prior guy.
Yeah, the prior
guy. The one
who
was still in office when most of this was
in office
place,
when most of this
absolutely
happened.
But, I mean, there once again, there are undertones, there are underpinnings here of a culture of corruption, and I think we absolutely have to get to the bottom of it. Is everybody in the IRS to be tarred with the same brush? Absolutely not. But let's get down to the facts.
Marge, what about the president not having a modified limited hangout, but just having a hangout and sort of pushing out all of the information?
You mean like a Google hangout?
What are you I mean pushing – that modified limited hangout is a Watergate reference. I'm not bringing up Watergate per se.
Why not just push out
the information?
No, if you're going to slip in a Watergate reference like that,
it's so obscure,
Chris.
No one would have known it. I thought you would pick up on it. But in any case, why not just tell the truth?
I have no evidence that certainly I
quickly.
I no
why
evidence.
Not tell the
truth
quickly?
The president is telling the truth. Believe me. And if you think that's the right strategy, I'll just have three words for you, and that would be weapons of mass destruction. And I guess that could be four words if you count the up. But the point is,
like,
I believe the president is telling the truth here. I have no doubt that he is. And here's the thing. There's a level of philosophical, strategic decision here.
Yes.
Do you think the White House decided that we should pinpoint Tea Party organizations, far-right organizations, and go after them with the IRS?
Get into that. We'll get into
because
that after the break.
If so, let me sell you, a bridge.
Let me give you a hint.
There's no way.
Just to participate in the conversation. The president of the employees union of the IRS runs a political action committee that has given 99.1% of its contributions to liberal Democrats.
That doesn't answer my question.
No, it
I'm
doesn't.
Asking
no, it
you
doesn't.
You
but I'm just I'm offering that as a
statistic. The brilliant strategist who got Obama where he is today would sit down and say, let's use the IRS and pinpoint these organizations with this name. No one will ever see what we're doing.
Crystal McQuarrie.
You know, there's no way we were talking earlier, though, about Benghazi. Now, we're going to talk about that in the second hour. But what came out with Benghazi was all the back and forth between the press shops and the cleansing of documents and the striking of this word. That happens all the time. So you can't tell me that the press people at the IRS were not communicating with the White House and that they knew this was coming.
That's Crystal McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune. She's joined tonight on Beyond the Beltway by Chicago Democrat activist Marge Halperin and Chicagoland Republican activist Jim Nalepa. My name's Chris Roebling. I'm sitting in for Bruce Dumont. We've got callers on the line, and we want you to join them at 800-723-8289. We'll see you after the break. It is Beyond the Beltway. I'm Chris Roebling, and you are listening to a great radio station wherever you are. You may be listening on the internet or on Sirius XM POTUS. Anyway, you're getting the program. We're glad you're here, and we invite you to join those listeners who are calling us at 800-723-8289, email at btb@museum.tv. We're joined by Marge Halperin. Now, Marge, give us a quick something about Marge Halperin that listeners want to know. From Maine to California.
Wow, that's a quick intro. I'm a communication strategist. You'd learn a lot more about me on the internet that way. But
You were a dedicated volunteer for Barack Obama. I remember you going off to.
That's correct.
Indiana, Ohio.
That's correct.
Maybe?
I knocked on a lot of doors for Obama.
Places
and,
like that.
A lot of different places, and have worked in politics. Former deputy press secretary to Mayor Richard Daley. Have worked with our governor here, Pat Quinn, as well, and ran a nonprofit for almost 10 years, I mentioned earlier.
There you go. Crystal McQuarrie, Chicago Tribune editorial board member.
Yes, I write editorials for the Tribune, focusing mostly on state government politics. Have covered state government and politics for about 16 years, and I am learning how to play the violin as an adult.
Is that right?
Yes.
Whoa.
It's difficult and painful.
I'd say brave and courageous.
Oh, well, now
thank
if you've
you for
heard
sharing.
Me.
Jim Nalepa.
Hi.
What do we need to know about you?
I graduated from West Point in 1978, served 6 years on active duty at the height of the Cold War, was a member of the Grenada Rescue Mission back in 1983. I can't believe it was that long. Since coming to Chicago, I've been involved in Republican politics, ran for Congress, and now I'm a candidate for...
Who'd you run against in congressional race?
William O. Lipinski.
Bill Lipinski.
One of the greats. And you know what, Bill, even though we disagreed, Bill was a stalwart. He knew what to fight for. He did a great job doing that. And now I'm running for Republican chairman. I'm one of the candidates for Republican chairman here in Illinois. And we will know that vote on June the 1st.
Wow. Something to look forward to.
Yes.
All right. Let's see. I want to hear from Patrick now. San Antonio listening on the great KLBJ. Patrick, join us. What do you think about the IRS situation?
Well, I was actually going to comment about Benghazi.
Okay. That's next hour. But say something real quick.
Okay.
Real quick.
Well, the email start off with something about legality in the context of perhaps a potential prosecution, and I don't understand the references to that in the context of the talking point, and I just wondered what that's all about and why is it ultimately how the talking points came out. How does that pertain to the any potential of prosecution, and it also seems that the administration's, it seems to reflect the administration's goal of treating the terrorists as criminals.
All right, Patrick, thank you very much for joining the conversation. We're going to keep Benghazi in mind for the second hour. Kurt, listening on WLS here in Chicago, your point, please.
Yes, I was going to just say that being that elements inside the Obama administration seem to be playing fast and loose with the First Amendment, with the old media, which has basically been a lapdog for him, and then sicking the IRS on organizations that were teaching the Bill of Rights and the U.S. Constitution, why wouldn't Second Amendment activists and gun rights people be afraid of any legislation and not trust this president with the Second Amendment?
All right. Should he be trusted with the Second Amendment? We'll put that to Crystal McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune. Thank you, Kurt.
Well, I'm not sure that those are related topics. I think Second Amendment supporters probably are anti-Obama all the way
to
around.
Begin with.
Right. So I don't really think that's necessarily related to this, to the scandal with the IRS. I think the IRS scandal, and if we can call it a scandal, I don't know, shows just again what we started out talking at the top of the hour, which is government is too big. It's the bureaucracy is too complicated. We need to simplify the tax code. And that's what we heard a lot of testimony from Stephen Miller, that this was more a case of ineptitude than you know, corruption. I think they crossed the line, personally.
But I want to ask Jim and Marge about, you know, we have these periodic conversations about the quality of our public discourse. And so Congressman Gabby Giffords, God bless her, was at the wrong place at the wrong time, and a crazy person entered into a multiple victim public shooting, and lives were lost, and terrible things happened to many people. And there was immediate conversation about the quality of our public conversation. When President Obama goes to Bowie, Maryland, and says that he thinks Tea Party groups are a threat to democracy, is that signaling to folks down the food chain of the big federal bureaucracy that it's okay to take the Tea Party stack of files and put them into the category for enhanced interrogation?
There's no question. I mean, the president is throwing matches on Tinder. And you know what? You just can't have that, especially from the left. We've heard it. We need to bring the level of discourse down. But this has been one president that has been an incredible name caller. If you can't agree with him, call him names. And he's done it with the Tea Party, and he's done it with, you know, goes back to his campaign. You know, those folks clinging on to their guns, God, and whatever else. I mean, I don't even know the quote. But, I mean, when you speak in those pejorative terms, it absolutely affects the level of discourse. You know, I have nothing against President Obama. He's our commander in chief. I would, you know, I'd love to sit and have a beer with him at the White House, as he's asked people to do. But I think sometimes he has not acted presidential in his language, and it's fueled the fires of these public debates.
Marge, it's not just me. I mean, Peggy Noonan, many others are saying,
Noonan, that nonpartisan.
No, no, she's a right wing, yeah, you know, writer for the Wall Street Journal. But is there something to the disdain that has been expressed? The senators and the U.S. Senate co-signing this letter to the IRS, take a closer look at these Tea Party groups.
Look, I would say flatly that the Tea Party is not nearly as big a problem for Democrats as they are for Republicans. The Tea Party is causing all this trouble for the Republican Party, making it difficult for them to get traction on a national basis, causing the infighting that is preventing them from attracting enough votes. Look what happened over the immigration issue. Romney himself said it. The real issue here is the partisanship, and I'm glad you brought that up. When we're talking about background checks for gun control, something that an overwhelming majority of Americans support, we can't get that passed. Pat Toomey, Republican co-sponsor for this, said it himself, because his fellow Republicans, held hostage somewhat by the Tea Party right-wingers,
as if the left is,
could not support anything, quote, and I'm quoting Pat Toomey, didn't want to be seen helping the president do something he wanted to get done. Well, this is something the American people want, and it was stopped because of this paralysis that's happening because of the infighting in the Republican Party. If you were looking to target groups from the White House point of view that were problematic for the White House, I don't even think you'd pick these same organizations. I think the whole thing was ham-handed and clumsy. It was certainly wrong, intolerable, as the president said. But strategically good for the president? No. No one who understands strategy from the White House point of view would have chosen to do that with the IRS.
Blaming infighting in the Republican Party as a cause to as part and parcel of not being able to move this country forward is laughable. It's absolutely laughable. There is as much discourse and hostage holding within the ranks of left-wing Democrats as I've seen in any organization. You had 2 years. You had the first 2 years of the Obama administration. Nancy Pelosi ran the House. Harry Reid ran the Senate. And you couldn't even get your own programs through.
This issue too with Christian the IRS, McQuarrie. There are just as many Democrats. Dennis Kucinich was on the shows this morning condemning this. So I mean, I don't think there's any question that this is bipartisan and dual scrutiny of what the IRS has done. I mean, the damage. I don't even think we've seen the extent of the damage at this point. And I think to your point, Marge, they at the time the Tea Party has lost a little bit of its steam, but at the time it was. They were powerful groups and turning seats over in Congress. This is the time when the IRS was kind of digging in a couple of years ago.
I think that people have got to look at this in context, and the context is the run-up to the reelection campaign. And the sounds came out that there were problems, and a lot of people were dismissed as right-wing lunatics. Oh, you're being paranoid. I mean, I think the Democrats in Congress, the folks who are going to face joblessness, who are going to face immigration reform, the folks who are going to face implementation of Obamacare, if it's ever going to be implemented. But I mean, I think people have got to look at, you know, things that were being said and what finally got admitted to by the IRS.
Obamacare has already been implemented. You realize that if you have a child who's under the age of 26 or there's a whole host of things that have already come into effect from that. So, but look, I think the partisanship is the issue. I think this is the problem we're having. And I think however people view this last week in the president's life, and by the way, his own polling numbers haven't really changed.
They have not taken a hit.
They haven't changed at all.
Scott Rasmussen came out this afternoon and sort of the same as it was 10 days ago.
It is Congress, and quite specifically, although I never do a show like this when somebody on the right side doesn't mention Nancy Pelosi and the ire that brings. I don't even understand, but good for you. That's once, and we're going to hear her name a couple more times before we're done.
Absolutely.
But
sure,
the fact is, it's Republicans in Congress who have the worst ratings in the polls in this country right now, down in the dregs. And that is a problem.
Last time I checked, Harry Reid was controlling the Senate, and he's a Democrat.
Hold on, guys. 3 days they controlled. The filibusters took away Democratic control.
We'll be right back to talk about the AP issue and what the Department of Justice did to the Associated Press. That's right after this break on Beyond the Beltway. I'm Chris Roebling in for Bruce Dumont. If it's Sunday evening, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. We listen to the Sunday talk shows so you don't have to. My name is Chris Roebling. I'm sitting in for Bruce Dumont. Our number is 800-723-8289. We've been talking a lot about the Internal Revenue Service situation, not to say scandal, although I think it is a scandal. But let's shift gears here and talk about the Associated Press. What we have here is a situation in which the United States Department of Justice gained access to these call records of 20 different individuals associated with the Associated Press. They were reporters and they were editors. These are actual beneficiaries of the First Amendment. And then when this came to light, Eric Holder came out and said, I don't really know a lot about it. And he kept saying that in different ways. Marge Halperin, are you concerned about this particular event involving the Obama Department of Justice?
One thing I didn't say in my short bio is that I spent nearly 20 years as a journalist reporting Chicago and nationally for National Public Radio and others, and NBC Radio News and others. So I certainly perk up my ears when I hear about investigations of reporters. I really would love to see a thoughtful, deep conversation about this issue of leaks, because it's been an ongoing issue, and you hear it on a city-state level, you hear it nationally. What should government do, or a corporation do? I mean, if it's everywhere, when they can't control their own information and the flow of information. I would like to know why or what was done on the government side, or why it wasn't done on the government side, to try to track the release of information as opposed to the receiving of information.
Are you, based on what you know right now, are you okay with the Department of Justice getting these call records for the 20 journalists at the Associated Press?
I don't have enough information. I don't think we understand what happened and why and in what course of events, what else was done. But I think fundamentally for national security, and if I was Chevrolet, I would think the same thing for corporate security or, you know, you have to be able to control your flow of information. But how do you do that?
Here's a working journalist, Kristen McQuarrie, Chicago Tribune.
Government leaks to the media on purpose all the time. There are all kinds of different ways that you strategically leak information. As a reporter, I think if you're dealing with a leak that has potential for national security concerns, which this case did because AP actually held the story for, I think, 5 or 6 days until they were reassured that there was no national security risk. When you're a reporter dealing in that kind of a situation, you should probably know that your phone calls and what you're doing when you're in such a sensitive situation could at some point be subpoenaed. I think the argument that AP is making that, in fact, the sweep was too broad is probably the case. You're saying 20. I thought I read 200. 200 phone calls over two months.
I'm saying 20 individuals.
Okay. Yeah. Over a two-month time period. And even prosecutors have said, you've got the byline of the reporter who did the story. You know the small number of people who had the information. So you really, do you need to pull all those phone records? You just need to make a connection between that reporter and the people you know who have the information.
The New York Times said they had upended 30 years of practice. I mean, that was the New York Times. Jim Malepa, your view on the
I think we all can agree. As someone who's worn the uniform of the United States, somebody who has been in a combat situation, national security leaks that affect the lives of servicemen and women are absolutely unacceptable. Leaks that affect the national security of the United States are absolutely unacceptable. Leaks must be closed. Now, the question then becomes, has this AP situation, is it too broad? And from what we know right now, and Marge, I'm going to agree with you, we don't know enough, but it seems to be far broader than it's been in the past.
I know enough to tell you this. I think that the Justice Department and Eric Holder did not serve President Obama well by having Eric Holder go out and talk on this. I think they should have had his deputy, who actually signed the thing, come out and say, I'm the guy who signed it. My name is Joe Schmatz. I'm the deputy attorney general, and I did it on such and such a day, and Eric Holder recused himself on such a, you know, 3 days before that. The guy should have got, not to tell us any of the internals, right? But to say due process was executed prior to authorizing this and it was justified by the facts. And that's all I can tell you. But I mean, if they had done that instead, I mean, I don't like Eric Holder. No surprise. But I felt bad for the guy because he was out there. He looked like he didn't know which way was up.
Yeah, I would agree. And again, this is just another example of if the White House is there's they have an entire, you know, press operation in every agency of every government sitting in congressional hearings so that they are on top of everything that's happening. And so for something like this, again, just the way that this information came out, and I mean, the Associated Press is not just the Associated Press gives their information to radio stations, TV stations, and newspapers across the country. You don't really want to mess with the Associated Press. At the same time, I understand when national security is involved, and even being a reporter and speaking at the Tribune, we had a case where the mayor's office had to reveal to us that in fact they were recording some of our conversations with reporters without our knowledge. So it's not a comfortable situation to be in. But I think anytime you're on the phone nowadays, you know what you're saying could be leaked.
Yeah,
and when it involves national security, to your point earlier, you're really sure about that, I would think.
Yeah. So, Marge, are you looking for better public relations out of the Department of Justice?
Well, I don't know how well coordinated this was. I hate to tell you, and it will take a few more minutes than we have right now to tell you, but having worked inside government in many areas of government, as you have, Chris, not as well orchestrated as you might like to think.
No, Jim Nalepa, how about you? What are you looking for out of Department of Justice public relations?
Honesty and openness, which we have not had during this entire administration.
You might even say fast and furious.
Amen to that, brother.
My name is Chris Roebling. Or not. Marge Halperin, our Democrat, says or not. Jim Nalepa, our Republican, says absolutely. And keeping right down the middle of the road, it's Kristen McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune. This panel will be joined by Annika Green at the top of the hour. We're going to talk about international, Benghazi, Syria, Russia. What's going on overseas? It's Beyond the Beltway. Live from Chicago, this is Beyond the Beltway. My name is Chris Roebling, and I am sitting in for the great Bruce Dumont, who's traveling this week, but he'll be back next Sunday. He wants you to call us at 800-723-8289, and our email is btb@museum.tv. If you were listening in the first hour, you know our terrific guests here in studio are Marge Halperin, Democrat activist in the city of Chicago, Jim Nalepa, Republican activist in the state of Illinois, and Kristen McQuarrie joins us from the Chicago Tribune. We're hoping to be joined shortly by Annika Green. Annika Green is here from Washington, D.C. Annika, good to have you on board. Annika is an independent journalist and has until recently been writing a lot of editorials for The Washington Times. Annika, I announced in the first hour that we were going to talk this hour about Benghazi and international. So I'll start off with you as the newcomer to the panel. Can you give us a few thoughts on how you think the Benghazi issue, with its various manifestations of security beforehand, activity during, and telling the truth afterwards, how is this issue going right now for the administration?
Chris, it's obviously going really terribly. It's one of what is being characterized as a triumvirate of issues comprising what has been hell week for the administration. And communications people such as Dan Pfeiffer have been doing the rounds this weekend trying to get the nation cumulatively over all three issues of Benghazi, the IRS scandal of looking like Tea Party groups were targeted, and the AP being targeted by the FBI for whether or not they were receiving leaks from the inside the administration. So all of these three issues have exploded. Benghazi is not going to go anywhere, despite the White House's best efforts. I would say the Republicans have realized their mistake after the results of the election in November in letting Benghazi go, in a sense, and Mitt Romney not pressing President Obama in the second and third presidential debates about what we knew and what happened. And so now those investigations are being pursued. And it is, I think that it is probably a political strategy by the Republicans to make this something that sticks to either or both Hillary Clinton or Vice President Joe Biden, who may be running for office for the Democrat nomination in 2016.
We had some striking comments. You mentioned Dan Pfeiffer. Dan Pfeiffer was out today, as you say, doing all of the Sunday morning talk shows. At one point, he got into an exchange on one of the talk shows about where President Obama was in the moment on the evening of September 11th, 2012. And responded, it's irrelevant about where Obama was. He was in the loop. He was getting information as it became available. Marge, you've seen some of the Sunday talk shows. You know about the release of the sort of 100 emails. Do you think the administration can turn the corner on Benghazi, or is Annika correct? Is this not going anywhere?
I agree it's not going anywhere. By that, I mean there's nothing to it. Nothing is going to come of it. There is no smoking gun. There's no you can argue about talking points, but why would you? There's nothing here except a tragic loss of American lives in an incident that couldn't be changed, regardless of what was done at the time those calls came in. There's no relief to be sent from anywhere. There was not an option at that point. And I certainly think it's going nowhere as an investigation because there's nothing to pursue.
Benghazi will go on because no one was fired. So many people made tragic errors. No one's accepting responsibility. And what this administration has done in this regard is gone out, and I'm not going to go quite to say they consciously lied. Somebody consciously lied. They changed talking points. They obfuscated what was going on. They knew that a terrorist attack took place that night. Obama knew it. Hillary knew it. They all knew it. And yet Susan Rice went on national TV and kept talking about this video, which obviously, if you don't believe that they were trying to change the message with this bogus story of this video, you're smoking more medical marijuana than the Senate of Illinois is going to allow you
which
to do.
Which just passed medical marijuana on Friday.
The question I have is why? Why changing that story? What was the motive?
Well,
what is
here's Kristen McQuarrie. I think she could pick that up, not as an advocate, but
no,
staying in the Tribune's grant of
Well, I'm on
neutrality.
The editorial board, so I'm allowed to. I'm allowed to
right.
opine. What I think gets lost sometimes in all of the back and forth and who knew what. This was 6 weeks out from the election. The entire White House was. I mean, if you think the president 6 weeks out from the election is doing his job as president, then you're really naive. I mean, he was campaigning full time. He was preparing for debates. Every single movement of his day, every word he uttered, when you're that close and it's so intense and so delicate, everything is focused on his reelection at that point.
But we
so
did not reason, elected so let me finish him to my, protect America.
So the reason that they wouldn't have come out and wanted to acknowledge this was a terrorist attack, you'll recall, is he was being lauded for his national security or his national presence, his international footprint. He was being badgered about everything at home. But overseas in his relationships, we got
It was said.
Yes.
It was said. He was getting credit for international relations.
He was getting credit for international relations. You don't want to have a terrorist attack on September 11th, 6 weeks out from an election. And this is – let me just read the talking point really quickly. This is what Susan Rice said that day on those 6 days – 5 days after it happened. They knew 5 days later that this was not an uprising. This is what she said.
They knew
Hillary Clinton knew at
2
o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
The currently available information suggests that the demonstrations in Benghazi were spontaneously inspired by the protests at the U.S. Embassy in Cairo and evolved into a direct assault against the U.S. diplomatic post in Benghazi and subsequently its annex. There are indications that extremists participated in the violent demonstrations. That is the most watered-down gibberish and denial that this was a terrorist attack that
Marge,
I've seen.
We'll come right back to you. Annika, your reaction to some of the very close sort of textual exegesis that is now coming out of your colleagues down in the D.C. press corps. I mean, some folks down there are looking at every, literally down to every word to chart the progression of those talking points.
Well, my first question has been, why didn't this happen sooner? This is something that people should have been talking about before the election. And it matters. Now, I worked in the White House. I was in the speechwriting office, and I have to disagree. When the president is out from an election, yes, what is happening on the campaign is foremost in his mind, but he still has to do his job. And not every event that's scheduled is about the campaign. So whether or not he wanted to acknowledge something that was ultimately true, I mean, it would just be, I think, stupid to think that, oh, maybe we'll acknowledge it later is any kind of gain. And secondly, the question of why argue over talking points, what does that gain us at this point? Well, it lets us know whether or not we have someone in office who is going to be straight with the American people. I mean, honesty is something that is of high value. It's a fundamental American value. And if the highest leader in the land is willing to obfuscate on something this important, whether a top American official was murdered, and we don't even know yet, still it hasn't been revealed whether he was actually murdered on American soil, which would have been at the embassy. If that has happened, that's something the president needs to come out and address and show leadership on, not try to pretend like it didn't happen and then send a lackey out to issue whatever sort of talking points, watered down or not, to try to mislead Americans about what actually happened. Everybody knew it was a terrorist attack on 9/11.
And that's Annika Green. She's staying with us for at least another segment, coming to us from Washington. I'm Chris Roebling, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. We're joined by Jim Nalepa, Kristen McQuarrie, and Marge Halperin. And we're going to be back right after these words. From coast to coast and border to border, Sunday evenings means beyond the Beltway. It's Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont. He'll be back next week. Joining us right now in the studio, we've got Republican Jim Nalepa, editorial writer Kristen McQuarrie, Democratic activist Marge Halperin, and on the phone from Washington, Annika Green. Marge, we're talking about Benghazi, and I know you've got some things to say. Let's start with you.
Well, look, you can go off in a whole lot of directions with the benefit of hindsight, but the fact is this hindsight is still blind because we don't exactly know everything that was known at the time, whether you go over the details of a 2 a.m. call or not. There's a whole lot involved with national security, and Jim, I know you're aware of this, that may or may not even be a part of this incident that the president knows and that those working on the responses, public responses, know. We don't know all the things that went into that. Frankly, I think I want my White House to have restraint before they use the word terrorism, before they send out a panic call, before they build some hysteria about terrorism. We better be darn sure, because you don't want the flip story where the president has come out and said, this is an act of terrorism. We find out it was not. By some definition, he called it an act of terror. They were moving in that direction. But I'm happy with somebody who uses the office judiciously. And if you think that it would not have been beneficial, Kristen, for the president to come out and stir up hysteria over terrorism right before the election, go back and look at how George Bush won a second term. I think for the president to wield his authority politically with the anxiety that we all have about terrorism would have been the wrong call. And the fact that they were judicious, I appreciate that, and I want that in a president.
All right, Annika, you're a Bush White House staffer. You heard Bush's name taken in vain there. Your reaction?
My reaction is, first of all, how much hysteria is raised by an actual terrorist attack? Because that's what it was. It wouldn't take hindsight for the Obama White House to anticipate that something could happen on the anniversary of the worst attacks we've ever sustained. That's not an issue of hindsight. Secondly, stirring up hysteria, if you want to not use hindsight and actually remember what is historically accurate, at that time when Bush was being reelected, it wasn't that long after we had been attacked. Multiple terrorist attacks had been foiled, had been prevented from happening under his administration as a result of the policies that he was pursuing and as a result of the fact that people around the world internationally know that they had to respect what he was doing.
I can tell you that has gone out. Launch a war.
But here, you know, Marge, if there was any points of question, I would cede your point. With the testimony that has come out, there's no question that they knew within hours that it was a terrorist attack.
Testimony
there
is no narrow question. Point of view.
There's no question to the guys on the ground, the guys that were talking to Hillary Clinton. I'm sorry, Mr. Hicks said he was stunned and embarrassed when Susan Rice talked. Here's the analogy. When George Bush flew onto the carrier, they said he spiked the football. The Democrats went all over him, said mission accomplished. As far as I was concerned, in this last election, Obama was spiking the turban. He took bin Laden's turban. He was spiking it left six ways to Sunday. We have al-Qaeda on the run. And he knew in this election cycle that if a terrorist attack reared its ugly head, that all his comments about winning the war, about al-Qaeda, about him doing a good job would all go for naught, and it would still be game on. And I think Romney missed an incredible opportunity.
Kristen McQuarrie, Marge says there's a lot we still don't know about Benghazi. And to borrow Jay Carney's phrase, Benghazi was a long time ago. How come we don't know more about Benghazi?
I think we do know a lot about Benghazi. I mean, there were survivors of Benghazi. There were people who were on the roof waiting for help who have been able to give us a pretty accurate timeline of what happened. I think we do know what happened.
Physically at the location, but other factors that were happening?
No, personally, I don't think the American people would have been terribly outraged at the way the incident itself was handled. It was chaos. It was an unexpected attack. It's the lying after the fact that always gets people in trouble. And that's what I think this administration did. Tried to walk back the story, tried to tamp it down, downplayed it during debates, downplayed it during the rest of the election cycle. And now, come to find out, we have proof from these emails, from these CIA people who are, you know, they're not political.
They're not at all. They were right there. They saw it. Their testimony is eyewitness testimony with conversations back to the U.S., to the Defense Department and the State Department, as high as Secretary Clinton herself.
But let me go to Annika for a quick one. Annika, why wasn't this pursued by the Republicans when you're in a national campaign, when you're 6 or 7 weeks out from Election Day, when things had narrowed around the time of the first Romney-Obama debate. What happened? Why was this left on the bench and not put onto the playing field?
Well, I'd like to say first, I think for the American people, it's two issues. One is it shouldn't have been an unexpected attack. I mean, a school child could say, well, if you're a terrorist, you're going to try to hit America again on the anniversary of the sensitive, on the sensitive anniversary. Secondly, it is the way that it was handled and not just during, after. Why did it take CNN to find the ambassador's diary and return it to his family if it was being handled so well during or even after in the cleanup? And that's just like literally the cleanup. Secondly, to get to your question, Chris, why didn't Republicans push on it? Well, there was a lot of, you know, inside baseball going on. The Romney campaign was not confident that if he pushed on Benghazi that it would play well with moderate voters. He was trying to strike this right tone where he could keep the people who are, you know, more on the right, who are definitely not going to vote for Obama, but were still sort of unsure whether or not he was conservative enough. He wanted to keep them in the coalition, but he also wanted to appeal to the independents. That was his strategy. It didn't work.
All right. Now, Marge, let me ask you this from the standpoint of someone who supports Barack Obama. I wonder, is it too late for Barack Obama and the administration once again to push out all of the information on Benghazi, let the chips fall where they may, so that the country can get back to its business of growing the economy and passing the immigration bill or some of the other, for instance, Obama priorities?
Oh, I can't imagine that this issue is going to stop us from moving ahead on things that are important to this country. As we discussed in the last hour, what's stopping us from doing that is the partisanship bickering that prevents Republicans from voting for anything that they want Democrats to support. But I would like to ask Annika, if this was so predictable, why did Republicans cut funding for security and other issues at our national embassies? Why wouldn't we want to have spent more money on the embassies if it was so predictable that there would be another terrorist attack? Predicting in hindsight is casual and too simple, and I don't.
I will make a prediction now. Next year, September 11th, 2013, we should watch out for a terrorist attack. I mean, that's just really fundamental. Regardless of funding, money is there. Cutting funding is a matter of looking to use your resources judiciously. You can still deploy resources such as the ones that were standing by as the attack was happening. That wasn't a matter of funding. That was a matter of leadership.
There were people who thought it was obvious that the bombings in Boston were terrorist-driven because of the timing of that. I mean, you don't know until you investigate. And again, I respect
Are you asserting that the bombings in Boston were not a terrorist incident?
Well, I mean, international terrorism tied to things that they were not tied to. No, but it was not domestic. International terrorism is what I meant.
Well, I want to get back to the issue of Benghazi and its impact on future events in Washington. I mean, is this something that as the, you know, investigative powers of Congress sort of turns into more hearings, more document production, more sworn testimony, is this something that will capture the minds of Americans? Will this hurt the president's ability to get things done? Or is this going to be something like a parlor game with all respect to the lives lost and the families forever affected by this? Will this turn into sort of a foreign policy parlor game where people are going to be going back and forth over we use this security and not that security? Jim?
Chris, you know what? I don't know. Let's see how it plays out. But I'll tell you one thing: It's not going to go away because of the failure of leadership. I teach a leadership course, and there is a incredible lack of holding people accountable, not only in the government but all throughout our society. We have to step up. We have to avoid these leadership failures. We have to hold people accountable, and this is the first step in making sure that people are held accountable in this government going forward.
I think they may have, you know, Congress is going to have more hearings into this, but I don't know that the hearings were terribly enlightening. I don't know that the emails really showed us anything. There was no big smoking gun. I think this is a story that has kind of taken its course. I mean, I'm looking at a 7-page timeline story from the Washington Times. I don't know what, unless there's a whistleblower or there's more information that's going to come out. I just think this is going to be one of these cases where you're going to make a judgment based on what you know.
Margin, Annika, we got less than a minute. Annika, we want you to stay for another segment, but Margin.
And if we're going to hold people accountable, let's hold the Republicans accountable who blocked spending more money to increase security at these dangerous posts. You're going to find many of them one and the same who are now complaining that the president didn't do what he was supposed to do. Parlor game indeed.
Annika, is this going to be a national issue?
I think that they're going to, I think both sides are going to collaborate, Democrats and Republicans, to find a scapegoat to pin it on to make it go away. And I think the Republicans want it to be Hillary, and Barack Obama doesn't want his presidential legacy to go down with Benghazi, and so he's probably willing to give it to them.
Fascinating. All right, so we are going to be back to talk a little bit more. We have got to get into a few. We'll probably want to talk about that with you, Annika. Are you able to stay one more segment?
I've got to go. I'm so sorry.
It's Annika Green. She's been joining us from Washington, but thanks very much, and look forward to having you back on the program sometime. Annika's a longtime writer for the Washington Times and an independent journalist. Here in
and
Chicago.
I'm with Rare now. Check out Rare.us.
Rare.us. There you go. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Chris Roebling in for Bruce Dumont. The program is Beyond the Beltway. Joining us tonight, it's Marge Halperin, Kristen McQuarrie, and Jim Nalepa. We're going to be back after this, maybe a little bit about Benghazi, and then we'll get to Syria. We look forward to your calls. Sunday evening means Beyond the Beltway. We're on the radio, led by the great flagship station WLS AM here in Chicago, a 50,000-watt legacy station. We're on the internet, beyondthebeltway.com, and we are on the satellite with POTUS XM Sirius or Sirius XM Radio, and love to reach listeners wherever you may be. Our phone number is 800-723-8289. Let's talk a little bit about Syria. Syria is a very special case because it's not a part of what was once referred to as the Arab Spring, and it has we've had a tyrannical dictator there in Bashar al-Assad, a son of Hafez al-Assad, and he has been not respecting human rights in all directions. And obviously, there has been a revolt, a long story in the New York Times today about how he misjudged the impact of a drought last year, and that radicalized the farmers and some elements of the middle class, and that turned into the situation he now faces, in which at least 70,000 civilians have lost their lives. And in addition to that, President Obama some months ago said if there are chemical weapons used by Syria, then that's crossing a red line and something is going to happen. Chemical weapons have been used in Syria, but there's some debate about whether or not they've been used by Syria. And so far, no action from President Obama. In the meantime, dealing with the humanitarian crisis with a new Secretary of State, John Kerry, a new front has been opened in the Syrian issue, and that is, will the Russians, who are longtime patrons of the Assads, for a variety of reasons, most of which are not good to the United States, will the Russians help us get to a parley at which the future of Syria can be decided? That idea is now a signature early initiative of the second Obama administration in terms of foreign policy. John Kerry has put a lot on that, and the president, by extension, has put a lot on that. My question for the three of you is it working? Will it work? Can it work? And if it doesn't, where does that leave President Obama's legacy that Annika Green was just talking about from Washington? Let's start with Kristen McQuarrie.
I just don't think we know yet. I mean, they've had, you know, Secretary of State Kerry has met more with the Russian foreign minister than I think any other international diplomat. But the idea of trying to have peace talks in Geneva, which I think they're trying to schedule for June, to come up with a plan for a country that is in such chaos like Syria, I'm not really hopeful. I think it's probably a smart strategy for the U.S. to try to cozy up to Russia and try to get some headway. But I just see like this is we're handling something so volatile that I don't know that talks are really going to produce much.
Jim Nalepa.
I agree with Kristen. I really don't see how it's going to work. I think there's a lot of window dressing there. I think it's a nice initiative, but unfortunately, within bloody civil wars, nice things don't necessarily have great impact. Assad is not going away. I doubt that the Russians want him to go away, and the rebels on the other side are not going to fight until the last drop of blood is done. This is a bloody civil war, and I applaud anyone within the administration or within the Defense Department that takes a look at this with a very, very even eye and does not commit U.S. troops to go on the ground. That's the one thing that I absolutely want to avoid at all costs. We should not get physically involved in this civil war.
Marge Halperin.
I think the talks at this level do put pressure on Syria. They keep the spotlight on. The fact that Kerry, Secretary of State Kerry, has been able to work this out with Russia, that we can come jointly to develop these talks in Geneva, says that the world is concerned about this and the United Nations is concerned about this, and the focus is on. I heard an interview on NPR the other day, not with Assad, but with one of his top ministers, and they were doing a pretty aggressive spin job about how great the country is and how it's all about the rebels, you know, who are causing trouble, and it's the rebels who have the chemical weapons, and we welcomes the UN to come in and investigate the rebels, but could we come in and investigate you and your government and whether you're using chemical weapons? Well, after you check out our claims about the rebels. So, clearly they're not giving an inch, but they're feeling the pressure. They're feeling the need to do these interviews, to be on the record, and they're getting more and more questions, and I think the talks will keep the heat on.
Well, one of the things that you inevitably conclude is the world does not wait for U.S. domestic politics. And even though one of the conversations that President Obama had this week with the American people about these three scandals we were talking about in the first hour in Benghazi and in the last half hour, took place next to the head of the government of Turkey. So he's conducting international diplomacy. We had the British prime minister in talking about the Syrian possibility. Then we had the prime minister from Turkey in, and the domestic politics diverted attention from the Turkish impact on the Syrian question. But I wonder, what is administration policy going to be in the Middle East as these currents keep moving at what seems to be a very rapid rate? Because right behind the Syrian issue, we've got Iran going nuclear.
Right. The old word, containment. The strategy of containment and containing that the Syrian revolution, the civil war, to the minimal loss of life. I think what the world is concerned about, what we are all concerned about, is when innocents get caught up in struggles like this. That's where the outcry is. And what we have to do is we've got to monitor, we've got to apply pressure, but right now we need to keep our military at a standoff distance.
Let's take a call very quickly from Brian, listening to us on WLSAM. He's in Schaumburg, Illinois. Brian, your quick point about Syria.
My point about Syria is there are no good options in Syria, and your one guest that was talking things up about negotiations, I think that's way off base. I just read some articles this weekend about how the Russians are selling the Syrians some of the top-of-the-line anti-aircraft missiles, anti-supersonic anti-ship missiles. Russia is not our friend. And, you know, I wish American media would stop being so lazy and would talk about the general dysfunction that exists in the entire Arab/Muslim world, whether it's Egypt, Libya,
all right,
Iran. It's a giant mess, and none of it is worth one American life. I don't see any clear way out of this. They're just going to have to get through their convulsion and reorganize their religion and move on, and I don't think we should get involved.
Period. Brian, thank you very much for that insight. I mean, I think if you were to go, polls indicate that nobody, Jim Nalepa's and Brian are quoting the mood of the nation here. Kristen, whatever it is that President Obama and Secretary Kerry are going to work out, it's going to be without American troops.
I sure hope so. I don't think there's any appetite in the American public right now to have troops on the ground in yet another conflict. And to Brian's point, that is true. It wasn't too long after Kerry met with the Russian foreign minister that we found out that Russia was, in fact, supplying weapons. So,
which Russia has been doing to with Syria for 40 years,
right.
45 years. I mean, since Nasser.
I think they were trying to build up a level of trust and friendship, though, where we thought perhaps we Senator Kerry or now Secretary of State Kerry would be able to roll back some of that relationship. And clearly,
the Lep is telling me Nasser was Egypt. Like, I didn't know that. I'm just. Thanks, Jim. That's really great.
That's all right. I just wanted to keep
you on track. I was already talking
here.
About Hafez al-Assad. All right. So, yeah. I mean, so we're kind of agreed, Marge, that that this is a situation where even if talking might not be effective, talking is about all we're prepared to do?
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to speak for the administration. Certainly not. I don't know. But it's a logical step that should be taken.
I think Obama is in trouble because he made that bright line comment. And now there seems to be, pretty significant evidence that chemical weapons have been used. And so now they have to sort of try to squirm around that bright line that he drew.
And I personally agree with you. I want to emphasize, though, that I don't think that his Syrian bright line comment has anything to do with his domestic favorability rating. I think that Obama politically hasn't suffered anything. I think Obama's suffering in the credibility realm overseas. And I think it's the mullahs in Iran.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, the linkage with Iran and the Syria situation is incredible. I mean, he has let, they have let Iran get out of control. And here I'm going to defend Obama because Clinton thought they had Iran in a corner. They kicked the can down to Bush. Bush kicked the can down to Obama. We have not effectively dealt with Iran. And this is, it's exacerbating this whole Syrian question.
Iran is shipping a lot of stuff across what might, I don't want to say failed state, but I mean, Iraq is not exactly stopping Iran from transiting materiel and possibly personnel across northern Iraq. So this really does implicate our entire connection with the Middle East. And I think that, like it or lump it, this is going to be a big part of Obama's legacy, Marge.
Well, it has been a big part of the national concern and the national agenda through, as Jim said, many presidents.
Right.
But if we're not going to commit, we don't want troops on the ground.
Absolutely.
So what
not.
We have to be very careful what sort of physical force we use. So what could they have done differently in Iran? I don't know.
Well, that's a topic for another segment, and we'll have another segment. I'm not sure we'll take up that topic. Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont. That was Kristen McQuarrie. She's joined by Republican Jim Nalepa and Democrat Marge Halperin. The program is Beyond the Beltway. Sunday evening across America, coast to coast and border to border, it is Beyond the Beltway. My name is Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont. Bruce will be back next week. So a little bit of roundtable conversation here. Maureen Dowd today in the New York Times made a point about Obama's current affect being wistful and petulant and talking about how he has fallen victim to old school screw-ups. And whether or not Hillary, who Annika Green, who was on with us for two segments, thinks might actually have her head chopped off because of the whole Benghazi issue, politically speaking, might run in 2016 to, quote, restore honor to the White House. Now, I'm not talking about Obama here personally, Marge. I just want to bring in this question of trust in government and how we seem – what do we – draw as a lesson or a conclusion that we're constantly seeking somebody new, somebody reliable, maybe charismatic, maybe poetic, and somebody who will solve these problems, whether they're going to be governor or mayor or president or senator. And yet, almost inevitably, they fall victim to the vicissitudes of office. And here Obama has fallen victim, as did Bush, as did Clinton, as did Bush before him. What do we take from that? From the great excitement of the new to the conclusion, whenever you think you've got something different going, it's always the same.
Well, you know, in the big picture sense, I think what we see is that we love our government. We love our system as a country. Americans are proud of the government. We all believe we live under the best system, I think, in the world. We're Americans, and we have a lot of pride in that. We want individuals to be infallible, to lead us, to give us the hope and the guidance and make the decisions that will make us 100% happy. Not a very realistic point of view, regardless of what party those people are with. But there's a CNN poll out from the last few days, which shows still Americans have confidence in our system of government, more than half, something like the upper 50s, 56, 57%, still believe in our system of government. We live in this country. We support this country. Do individuals disappoint us? Do we have hopes for different individuals that are not played out on different levels of government? Sure, because they're humans. But we support our country.
Marge, supporting a system and believing a system is the foundation of the American paradigm. However, leadership is something different. At the United States Military Academy, trust and integrity are the foundation of the leadership relationship. Without it, you can't lead. We do not trust Washington right now. We do not trust the Obama administration. And to get Americans to do their very best, we have to inspire and they have to trust, as opposed to just survive. You know, being a Republican, Ronald Reagan was the greatest influence for me. But growing up, John Kennedy said something, and I loved John Kennedy. He said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." Those were some of the most powerful words an American president ever spoke. We've lost that spirit, and we've lost it because of a loss of leadership. I want to see that leadership come back.
I would just say, I think in all of these cases that we talked about, we've talked a lot about truth and honesty and just, you know, having the administration tell it straight to the American people. We think that's what we want. But then we voters consistently go back and elect the mealy-mouthed politician who doesn't speak the truth. And as a media, we jump on you if you misspeak. Look at Romney's 47% comment. Look at Obama's "you didn't build that" comment. Those swung huge swaths of voters, and I'm sure most people didn't even know the context around those comments. So I think until voters are ready to hear the truth and then put people in office who will speak it, we're just going to be back in the same. We're just going to keep getting all of the cleansed press releases and the people who just, you know, don't want to offend anyone, and then that's what we end up with.
But Kristen, to your point, I agree with you. But unfortunately, the media has another agenda. If we had the straight, unbiased media that we had at certain points in our history, you're there. I absolutely agree with your
point. What was the point?
I believe
there's so much more information out there now that there is no. You can't say that there that the you know we used to
but
have
we are
reporters
pointed,
who.
I mean, we are getting pointers who reporters who are absolutely favoring one agenda. On the left.
Or another.
No question.
I'm not sure what this time was when the media was 100% unbiased. Every
Never
individual 100%, carries
but
their bias.
More.
I don't know about that. And, you know, that's a long debate. I can argue about Fox News and you'll pull out MSNBC and we'll get nowhere. I think the point is the media gives us a wide spectrum of points of view. We have to make up our own mind. I think that human beings are fallible. But I appreciate the leadership from this government, from this president, who is trying to navigate some very difficult waters in the middle of the most partisan Congress that we have had in the history of this country. That part is true. The government, I won't pile on the media here, but I do think that Congress has to find our
way.
See,
and I'm not so sure that it is the most partisan. I think that Congresses are always partisan, but I do think that one difference today that distinguishes it from all other prior days is the size of the government. And as the government grows and as things like the deficit, when you're talking about a debt up there in the $16 trillion category, or $20 trillion by the end of the second term, I think things have taken on a very different tone because people are concerned about if things are that big, there could be a crash that size.
That's a nice flip, but I'm not departing from my view that partisanship is what's causing trouble. That's what's costing us the trust of the American people. That's what's stopping government from doing its job.
I mean, it's very partisan, but at the same time, we have to look at spending cuts. And as you brought up, our biggest national security threat, I think, is our lack of economic security.
The House of Representatives, which is controlled by the Republicans, were elected by the people to blunt the Obama agenda.
It's Beyond the Beltway, a Jenna B. production, produced in association with WLS Talk Radio and Sirius XM Satellite Radio. We want to thank very warmly Tom Vercruz and Dan Dorfman. They helped make this radio program possible, as well as Bruce Dumont, who invited me in. Until this week, next time, this is Chris Roebling. Good night from Chicago.